Welcome to Across the Pod with our new relaunch episode. Today we're looking at the Pixel Core, and thankfully today we have the founder of the Pixel Core, Alex Lindsay.
Hi.
And you have me, of course, your host, Shash. So, just for the listeners at home, Alex, can you explain the Pixel Core in like a nutshell?
In a nutshell, the Pixel Core is really a guild for content creators. And so, you know, when you wanted to build a castle 500 years ago, you would send out a couple messengers to a handful of guilds and 1,000 people would show up. And the big thing is that it didn't have a, you know, there wasn't a corporate culture. You didn't have them on, you know, salary, so to speak. They were, the corporate culture, so to speak, was part of the guild structure, not part of the corporate structure. And so people are able to trade work inside of it. It had its own internal structure. It allowed them to instantly organize to handle work. I have a theory. The theory that we're kind of working under here is that that's where, you know, media production is going, where people don't really want everyone working for them all the time. They just want them when they need them. Or more importantly, they don't want anyone to work for them at all. They want to have freelancers that are spread out all over the world just handling the problems that need to be handled. And so the Pixel Core is really designed to attack that issue.
So you're the opposite of the movie studio, basically. People don't work for you all the time, and you come in when you need to do a production, and then you leave when you don't need to.
Well, the reality is that most of the time now, that is the way things are working. I mean, if you go to a movie studio, you know, a movie ramps up, and they hire hundreds or even thousands of people, and then when they're done, they let them all go. But what didn't happen is that in the effects industry for a long time, they would put you on what was called overhead. So if you were working at Digital Domain or ILM and you were important, and if you, and at the time, back when I started in the effects industry, when I was working at Lucasfilm or ILM, it was hard to find people who knew what we knew. And so they didn't want to let you go because, you know, if you went to work for someone else, replacing you would be difficult. But as there are more people available, and as the pressures of the industry became more intense, they needed to find a way to let people go more often and then just take their chances. The problem that they all have right now, that almost all the entire industry has, is ramping back up again when they need to add 50 or 100 or 150 compositors can be very, very difficult. And so what we're trying to do is figure out a way to make it easier for those companies to ramp up quickly by having a lot of people who already know how to work within a production environment, how to be accountable and get stuff done and so on and so forth. But it also is looking at the opportunity for our own members, which is that a lot of our members, what we're not is, you know, most unions that you think of, they call themselves guilds, they're really unions, and they are one industry. You know, so they're the screen, you know, the screenwriters, or they're the actors, or the whatever. The problem with that is, and there's, you know, that's fine.
I mean, like you were saying, I think on the cast of TWIM, that with the writer strike in America, it's all the writers striking here. If there is a writer inside the Pixel Core, he won't strike, because you've got people who do everything. One day you're compositing, the next day you're doing the match moving.
Exactly. And so the issue is that we're a very heterogeneous mix of people. And so we represent people who do everything. And so there is no, you know, them is just people outside the Pixel Core. but there's no one that, you know, there are producers and there's compositors and 3D people and actors and all kinds of other stuff that are mixed into the Pixel Core. And the idea is that inside of this guild, we're able to trade work back and forth. We're able to find standards that make sense for all of us. We're able to get things done. And the goal down the road, kind of the holy grail, is to be able to essentially have a self-organizing, you know, production organism. So what I mean by that is that a problem comes up. A member in the UK or a member in Kansas or a member in Ghana needs to do a project, and they can attract members from all over the world. They know what they know. They know how effective they are. They are in communication. They're in community with them, and they're able to then hire that work out in a very structured sort of way. Now, this is something that, you know, we'll get to 5 or 10 years from now. Right now, it's just getting everybody on the same page, you know, and which is where we're at right now.
I mean, many people don't know that with Leo Laporte's kind of the face of Twit.tv, if you don't know already, but The Pixel Core produces some of these great podcasts, Mac Break, and you've now split off. You've got PixelCore.tv, but you did a lot of the work in the early days, like Final Cut Multicam for the Twit video, which I having played with Final Cut, Multicam can be a pain.
You know, it's actually pretty easy to use now. I have to admit, the funny thing about that was that when I told Leo, you know, I have a bad habit of just, you know, I figure out how to do stuff after I already said I'd do it. And so, I mean, that's how I pretty much learn everything is under usually some kind of deadline and it just has to get learned. And so I told Leo, of course, you know, oh, yeah, we'll just shoot this whole thing with video and we'll do multicam figuring. It's not that hard. I saw the demo at NAB or whatever. How bad can it be? And then, of course, you know, 8 hours later, me banging my head against the wall. But once I got through it, once I knew what the rules are of multicam, and we actually have a great Mac Break about that Steve Martin did that really gets you on the page with it. It's actually not that bad. But yeah, one of the things that was really great that I feel really fortunate about with our relationship with Leo, in my relationship with Leo, was that he let us play. You know, he had this building podcast, this audio podcast that he was working on, and he just let us, you know, play around with, you know, cut our teeth on his show, you know, both in some of the audio stuff as well as some of the video pieces. And, you know, we learned an immense amount, or I learned an immense amount about producing podcasts, working on those early twits, because, you know, that was a real, you know, if you screwed up, it's one thing when you have 50 listeners or 100 listeners or 1,000 listeners. When you screw up, maybe someone's going to email you. When you screw up twit, you know, everybody, you know, you get 100 emails.
Leo's inbox gets full.
And then he tells you that his inbox is full.
I mean,
so you.
I mean,
yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, oh, I was saying, I have now write the show notes for Mac Break Weekly, which is Leo's Mac show along with you, and you learn very fast how to deal with these things because if you're like, for example, you write show notes, oh, they need to be in HTML, right? Need to redo that, and very fast you become accustomed to dealing with a large audience who tells you how to do it.
Right, and they're very passionate, but they can also be very unforgiving if you screw it up. And you know, when you have a large audience, you have a large sample rate, and you end up with very, very, you know, specific people. You know, like Leo and I go back and forth because I'm much more of a, you know, we provide our podcast in one format or two formats or whatever. We don't.
And he would do it in 12.
And he would do it in 12. Yeah. And every time I was doing all the conversions, I'd be like, this is insane. I can't believe we're doing this. And so, but he had, you know, lots of different listeners. He had the 400 listeners that listened to it on Oak Vorbis and would be very vocal if they didn't have it in their version, you know, that type of thing.
People don't know. You are pretty much in so many productions, the force behind it. I mean, you work for On Networks, for example, who have been featured in the New York Times. You do work with CocktailsOnTheFly.tv, which has led to the nickname Pixel Bar instead of Pixel Core, of course. And anyone who doesn't know, the host of Cocktails on the Fly can make amazing cocktails with or without alcohol. With or without alcohol. Yeah. I mean, Kenji Kato, he's done without alcohol. And you worked, obviously, with Twit, and you do your own shows now. So there's a lot of production force behind you. How do people go about joining?
Well, the big thing is that the actually what people are going to want to do is they're going to want to come up to the Pixel Core website during Macworld. We're going to be running a membership sale. So it'll be a much more affordable way to kind of try out the Pixel Core. In fact, the early sale, it'll be 3 months for $50 that people can kind of, normally it's a bit more than that. It'll be 3 months, $50, but that 3 months is March, April, May. And so if you join, you know, during Macworld, you'll actually end up getting another 6 weeks out of it. That's really a time for people to taste test the Pixel Core. We're going to be working on a lot of really cool projects in the spring and, you know, through May and the rest of the year. But we have all kinds of cool challenges and training and so on and so forth that's coming up for the members. And so it'll be a great way to, you know, very inexpensive way to really get your, you know, get a little bit of a taste of what we're doing. There's about, I think it'll be 80 hours of training that'll be available. So it's definitely going to be worth checking out pixelcore.com when that sale goes up, and that'll happen at Macworld.
Especially if you are in the region where you can get to San Francisco and go to Pixel Core Central, because, well, I mean, you're a worldwide organization, but I'm like, if you're anywhere near your central location, it's really you have to take advantage of it.
It's really fun, but I have to say that, you know, the we are very spread out. You know, the actually.
Yeah. You've got me here 6,000 miles away, so.
Exactly. And there's, you know, the Pixel Corps is, you know, we have members in 40 countries. They are, and we, most of us, you know, we very rarely see the local members, to be honest with you. I mean,
really?
You know, there's a handful of people that are on teams that come in here, and we hope to do a little bit more with them this year, but for the most part, you know, the Pixel Corps truly is an online entity, and we work pretty hard to keep it that way, and the reason is that we're really training both ourselves in systems as well as our members in thinking about you know, working with people in a very virtual sort of way. And so so that's the, you know, we kind of exercise those muscles all the time to make sure that our members are, you know, really used to dealing with online systems. And so we don't do that much. We do some hands-on classes that people come in from all over the world to take, you know, every quarter. But that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, people sometimes misunderstand you. When you go to your website, I think a few months ago, it's changed now, but a few months ago, that you basically showed them how you were shooting 444 MacBreak files, and people were like, I'm not part of this. I'm more of a geek in the network area, or I'm more of a geek in the behind-the-scenes technology area. The thing is, because I described it in my review earlier on my website, I said, apart from anything else, it's a group of tech-savvy people who are incredibly knowledgeable in their own areas and are willing to pass around.
Yeah, and a lot of what we, I mean, a lot of the goal of the Pixel Corps is really to create kind of a peer-to-peer learning structure where, you know, there's a lot of people, like when I need to learn something, I'm, you know, most of the time I draw on the Pixel Corps, specific members, specific projects, specific training created by the members. And as the Pixel Corps gets more experienced, as the Pixel Corps gets larger, that knowledge resource continues to grow. And I think that while we may not think of ourselves as graphic artists, I think that almost everybody has to, these days, needs to have some ability to build basic 3D models or build great presentations or build examples, graphic examples of what they're trying to create. I think that this transcends a lot of what we used to think of as just an artist did that. I think it used to be just a writer wrote, you know, wrote essays. Now we all are kind of expected to know that. And I think that as we go into the next decade or two, that graphics, you know, being able to produce understandable graphics, whether they're pretty or not, is going to be part of what everybody needs to learn to be competitive in the next, you know, in the next generation of work.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's just amazing the work you do, and obviously people don't know, if they want to catch up with the Pixel Corps, they want to see the kinds of things you discuss internally, what you do, they can subscribe to your show, This Week in Media, which is going to be my other podcast to check out this week. Can you just explain the show to listeners?
Yeah, well, it started, you know, of course, I was on This Week in Tech, and you know, and I really I wanted to have a This Week in Tech, but I wanted it to be a little bit more geeked towards media and everything from cool new cameras and technology all the way through what's happening in our industry. And so we started, you know, a year and a half ago, and we're now at, I don't even know what episode 80 or 79 or something like that. And it really delves into, we've got some smart guys. We're going to be adding a lot of new people this year. We used to record the whole thing in the studio, and now we're going to be doing it more like we're doing this podcast. And we're going to be adding a lot of great people and just really talking about both the business end of what's going on in the industry as well as the technology end of what's going on in the media industry in general. And if you're into that, if you want to keep your kind of pulse, you know, on that area, it's a pretty good discussion, pretty good group of people talking about some you know, whatever's happening that week.
Yeah, I mean, personally, there's two levels of users, in my opinion, when it comes to the kind of users who join the Pixel Corps. There's the kind of users who are power users, you know, they do Apple script, they do their scripting in their system, their command line, everything. They want to take that next step. So you join the Pixel Corps. But then there's this level of people inside the Pixel Corps, people like Ben Durbin, John Foster, and yourself, who understand red isn't a color. Red is a camera company run by a crazy billionaire who's blowing everyone else out of the water.
Right. And knowing that stuff is important. And it, you know, a lot of times, a lot of people are trying to make decisions about what kind of everything from what kind of video camera they should get at what at everything from $1,000 to $250,000. We get these questions all the time, and these are the kind of things that we talk about. Where is the industry going next year, next decade? And these are the kind of things we grapple with, and it's good to start thinking about them in small chunks, so that when you actually need to use that information, you have it at your fingertips.
Yeah, I mean, you don't just cover really, really, really expensive stuff. In terms like the Red, which is, I think, you really for a true Red system, you're looking at about $40K in US dollars. But you, for example, turned me onto something which was the Red Rocks Micro, which is this amazing system. You just take your little, little high def camcorders, which are abundant. You got your, for example, you got the Canon HD10, which is the HV20, but hard drive. Mm-hmm. And you can turn this into this cool looking production camera, which has got mics, it's got like a Red rail system on the side, and something I've never known about. And this costs half of what a V1U does from Sony. So you learn a lot just with, you don't even have to join the Pixel Core, you're looking at this from the outside and you're learning how much they do on the inside.
We really try to cover all of those areas, because we're really looking at a revolution in the media industry right now. The reason we wanted to create this podcast was because it really is changing very, very quickly right now. It's worth paying attention to, because it's not going to be these big, huge cameras all the time. It's going to be lots of people working with $1,000, $2,000, $5,000 cameras on budgets that are, a fraction, a percentage point of what it used to be. And that creates a lot of opportunity for a lot of people. So, I mean, that's, and hopefully we're kind of helping them at least think about, stimulate some thinking in those areas.
Thanks. So we've explained the Pixel Core, and I think as much details as anyone has done before, with the exception of the Pixel Core themselves. So I'll just, if you wouldn't mind, go into a short new media discussion just to give you a feel of the sort of thing Alex does on TWiM. So, for example, if we take the Red camera, this could go on forever, but explain the Red camera to the people who really don't know.
Well, the Red camera is, it was created by the founder, Crazy Billionaire. He created Oakley, and he's got some money, and he loves cameras. And one of the things that he noticed is that they're, a lot of the camera companies, what they do is they have lots of technology sitting in the lab, and they slowly...
Ordered growth.
So they put things out one at a time, because they want to slowly move you forward, to where if it got into a rush where they suddenly, it would cost them a lot of money if they're suddenly competing and they have to break out everything brand new all the time. So they want everything to kind of move forward. Like we all knew probably a couple of years ago that 1080p was going to be where all the TVs were going to go and all the cameras were going to go and all that other stuff as far as the consumer area. But we didn't see very many of them. And when they came out, they're very expensive because we slowly rolled them out because we wanted to make money on the 720p ones first. We just kind of move through everything. There always has to be something for you to upgrade to. So what he did is he skipped all of that. He said, you know what? I want to build the camera that I want, and I want to have it. I want to have it now, and let's just figure out how much it costs. Let's not worry about protecting our upline. Let's not worry about protecting all these other things. Let's just figure out what it would take to actually create a great camera. And what he came up with is the Red. And what you end up with is a camera that shoots 4K images.
Big Final Cut Pro can't handle them.
Well, it's interesting. What's great about it is that they figured out how to compress that footage so that when you bring that footage in, when you capture it, it's only running at 27 megabytes per second.
That's something scary RAID can do.
Yeah, that's not a big deal. What's crazy is once you uncompress it to do compositing or do other work on it, it's 48 megabytes a frame. So it goes to 900, about 900 megs megabytes a second.
Xserve required.
Yeah, a lot more than that. I mean, Xserve only goes a mere 250 megs a second. on in general. And so the, you know, it really becomes an entirely different beast as soon as you flip the switch. And so, but it's capturing all that data. It's compressing the raw bare patterns rather than the RGB, which gives it it makes it a lot more efficient. Anyway, but the point is that you have this great camera that's really designed around production. There's Steven Soderbergh is shooting the two movies about
Peter Jackson shot with it.
Yeah, he shot a test, which looked pretty good. I saw it in a theater.
It looks good, but it was pre 1.0, so it was a little blown out here and there, but it was just like a 35mm camera that was really clean and digital.
What's great about it is that the image sensor is the same footprint as a 35mm slide or 35mm film, which means that you have the same depth of field. And for those of you who don't know what depth of field is, this is really what oftentimes sets the difference between a handheld consumer camera and the big film cameras. And what that short depth of field means is that some things are in very sharp focus and everything behind them is out of focus. And when you watch a movie, watch how many times you're watching the movie and the person talking is in focus and everything behind them is out of focus. Most of that is created by what's called a wide aperture and a large, sensing region, whether it's film or whether it's a sensor. That creates that feeling, and it focuses your eye on that subject. And so that short depth of field is really important. It's very hard to get in a consumer camera. That's why stuff like the Redrox Micro exists, is so that you can get that depth of field back. The Red, has that. It has that big sensor that really provides just a killer image, great short depth of field. And for independent filmmakers, I think it'll take time at the top for it to really sink in. There are big cameras at the top that are part of the production system, whether it's the Dulsa or the F23 or the Genesis system.
F950.
The 950, yeah, the F23 is the new 950.
Yeah, it's like the built-out version, which is
exactly
weird.
Yeah, and so the there's all these high-end ones that are kind of embedded in the system. I don't think Red is going to make as much of a difference there right now, but I think for these independent filmmakers, for the smaller filmmakers, I think this thing is it's a revolution. And what's exciting is there's probably going to be thousands of these things out by the middle of next summer. And I think that the rental rates, because we look at, you think of buying the camera, but the what's important also is how expensive the camera package is, because you can rent it. So you might be able to rent the Red
camera.
You don't
want to own a camera though, because like the Red, things come along which blow everything else out of the water. You don't need to own, you just need to use.
Right, it depends on how many days a month you use it.
I mean, with the exception of the Pixel Focus, you're like an overdrive.
Right, so we would use it all the time. We spent more than that on our 950, but we use it, every week. It would be too expensive to rent it. But the Red camera, on the other hand, is a the Red camera really means that we could theoretically, if people play by the normal market rules, we could see rental rates as low as $500 or $600 a day. And $2,000 or $3,000 a week to rent these Red cameras, which would make it very easy to do great commercials, do great stuff on a very low budget.
Yeah, I mean, the key here is that they're not just doing a 4K camera that's blowing everything out of the water. They're flooding the market with them, which means people like Panavision, if they did their built-out version of the Red, they can't stick it to you.
Right. Well, that's the problem is that you're looking at version one. I mean, when you see version two, three, four, which I haven't seen, but I'm just saying when we see those, and it's rumored that Red's going to announce another camera at NAB this year. That's going to be a handheld pocket camera.
Like Silicon Imaging?
No one really knows. It looks like a handheld pocket camera that is completely handheld with the lens and everything else, that is still professional level at maybe $8,000 or something like that. And so that's the...
So a souped-up HD10, but for professionals.
Exactly.
Is that you mean by handheld?
We don't know. They all they'll say is that's what they said last NAB, and then they've been mums that have been the word. And so we're waiting to find out what that means, what they mean by that. But it could be a very... it could be a very exciting thing, and once again, you're looking at a media revolution that's really hard to hard to imagine. I mean, when you look at the kind of when you're looking at like how we see the news and how we see the world and how we see all these other things, what we're looking at is this ability for anyone, I mean, just about anyone, anywhere at any time, being able to shoot video footage that you could project on a large screen. And when you do that, it has all kinds of ramifications on how we view the world, how we view our government, how we view industry, how we view anything, because you can't hide anything. it's not the danger of Big Brother, it's the danger of Little Brother.
Little Brother.
Little Brother with a camera, a lot of times they say that, a picture is worth 1,000 words, but the pen is, there's a couple sayings that if you mash them all together, you get kind of the sense of it. The pen is mightier than the sword, and a picture is worth 1,000 words, which makes the camera, a howitzer. So the issue is that you have, everyone wielding these little weapons of mass distribution, it's going to change our world, and it's in a very exciting time to see all of this stuff happening.
What's kind of weird is that the acronym you just provided still means WMD.
I know.
So the thing was, I learned this from listening to Twim, is that the only thing that Crazy Billionaire, who's running Red, has done is he's fabbed his own chip. I was saying to a friend, if someone went to, say, Nikon, someone who doesn't really make video cameras, and you said, yeah, you know that chip you make over for the DSLRs that's like 21 megapixel, right, and you work out some deal which is OEM and you make it incredibly cheap, you could still blow Red out of the water. It's not over at this point.
It isn't, but the question is not only how that chip gets, the question is whether it can actually refresh fast enough to shoot video too. So at that resolution. So it's hard to say whether a lot of these still camera chips, I mean, they may be able to refresh at 3, 4, 10 frames a second, but can they do it at 30 frames a second or 60 frames a second? And that's something I'm not sure that all of these chips are capable of that refresh.
Whereas
and so
the Red is supposed to be able, I think you can hack it to turn it up to 240, can't you?
I haven't seen anybody actually do it yet, but that's the rumor, is that you would at 2K be able to get it up to 240 frames a second. It's designed, the spec is 60 frames a second at 4K, which would, because a 2K image is one quarter the bandwidth, that theoretically would mean that you could get up to those 240 frames a second, which would be amazing. I mean, the impact that has on visual effects for the average consumer is huge.
I mean, it's funny you just said, like, dismissively, 2K, whereas 2 years ago, we were like, 2K. This is so cool.
It's so funny. I bought my wife a camera for Christmas it's a little Exacty. It's like $400. And it shoots 640 by 480, which used to be broadcast quality, broadcast or 720, whatever.
Yeah.
But it used to be broadcast quality, but it shoots this little 640 by 480, but it goes underwater. So, if my son is, my 1 month old son, if he's bathing or whatever, you can take video. And so, but the funny thing is that I looked at the video and it just looks like a little preview now. I mean, it just looks so small. I could barely, I don't even know what to do with it, because we've been working at 1920 by 1080 for 2 years now. And 640 by 480 looks like this wee little image, and people send us problems. We make a green screen key here, and people send us, we were having trouble with this DV key, and they sent it to me, and I feel like I'm working on a postage stamp. Like, how can they expect to get any more detail out of this thing? There's nothing here, so.
I mean, you're used to working at 444 for a keying, and I'm like,
yeah,
what? You just use ProRes 422, and you're like, well, and the only reason you use 444 as a keying, ProRes 422 is more than enough. I mean, this is the sort of stuff you will learn with the Pixel Core. You pick up knowledge. You pick up knowledge not just by listening, not just by watching, I quote, brain dumps, mm-hmm. which is, I suppose that needs a better marketing term. that sounds kind of wrong. But you do learn just through word of mouth and through email.
Well, and also we post samples. We take stuff out of our shows. We take pieces out of our projects, and we go, okay, here's some footage that we had. Like, we've had roto examples that we did a bunch of film roto for a short film in L.A., and we just took the footage and we said, okay, this is the footage we got. These were the instructions, and let everyone try it together. These are the kind of things that we try to do a lot of.
And for example, I'm just going to pixelcore.com. This has been there for, I think, 2 years now, because it's got Amber MacArthur and Emmy Rails in it. But you have a MacBreak file which compares 411, 422, and 444 color comparisons and other free training. You offer this just as a starter.
Right.
And Pixel Core people get access to so much software. Someone said if the Pixel Core was just an OEM provider for software, it would be worth it.
Yeah, well, I think some people are there just for the software. So it's.
But there is more. That's the point.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of people. A lot of people are in the Pixel Core for different reasons. You know, some people are there just because we have great sales. Some people are there because we have access to legal access to lots of production software. Some are there just for the training. Some are there just to network. Some are there. You know, it's like this. And so you end up with a lot of people there for different reasons. And so we always have to pay attention to, you know, what everybody is looking for, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. Just looking at your front page, you can see all the stuff you do. And it's, I mean, you don't operate in the U.S. strictly. I mean, I've kind of misinterpreted and made it seem like, oh, you're worldwide, but you're mainly in the U.S. It's not like that at all. I mean, you went to TED Global this summer and you shot some stuff when you're in Africa, and you got people in Africa. It's truly the global village, you could describe it.
Well, we actually have a lot of focus in Africa. I mean, I think that, you know, I have a strong belief that media production is one of the fastest ways to ramp up economic opportunity in Africa. And so,
example, Nigeria.
Nigeria is a great example of filmmaking there. A lot of other companies, you know, what you're looking at is that most of Africa is going to have a problem with global warming. You know, there a lot of the arable land, a lot of the arable land is not going to be arable. So an agricultural based country may have a lot of trouble surviving inside of global warming. In addition to that, oil is, once it crosses over about $110 a barrel, it's never going to go back. No, it's just going to keep on getting more and more expensive. And so running in an industrialized nation could be also very challenging. So you're really looking at the opportunity for growth for an emerging world country really lies in ICT, you know, information technologies. And the problem is that when you look at Africa, you know, you have oftentimes a very shallow education base. And so how do we get people to a point where they can make money, make a living, you know, very, very quickly in something that doesn't require 5-10 years of back education? And so the great thing about media is it's like, you know, it's largely, you know, pictures, and you click this and you move this stuff over.
It's
and
not easy, but it is. There's a learning curve that is.
It's a skill. It's a skill that, but it's yeah. It's not any harder than making furniture. you know. So it's not.
If you can apply the same level of concentration, then it's
obviously
kind of
to become great at it and to do what Pixar does is a whole different world. But the point is there's an immense amount of work that's done that can be done that isn't any more complicated than making furniture. And the thing, and so we have these things where we want to teach people how to make furniture, how to fix cars, or how to do all this other stuff, and that's fine. But that's not, you know, even when we look at that kind of education here, what really would make a difference is people knowing how to make, you know, media, because that the demand for this is going to be growing very, very quickly. And so, and it's not any harder than the other stuff. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to do this. You don't need to know physics. You don't need to know programming. You don't need to know any of these things to excel in this industry. And that's the opportunity. So I spend anywhere from 2 to 8 weeks a year in Africa figuring out how we're going to provide this opportunity in that continent.
I mean, when you're saying ICT in the developing world, I mean, you've been to India, haven't you? You've been to Mumbai.
I have.
And I've been to Bangalore. And one of the crazy things there, it's so kind of, let's do this thing, let's go. And at the same time, you look at the corner of the photograph you've just taken and you notice there's a Modo billboard. Learn Modo from Luxology Training. And there's this place, I'm not kidding here, I can't remember who it was, but there was like a internet cafe where they have a Pixel Core poster or something. It's definitely third party. They didn't inform you properly. But they said, do you not have a connection fast enough to learn from the Pixel Core? Because it's still India. They have fast connections, but they're incredibly expensive. And they said, what we'll do is you sign up here in the internet cafe and we'll burn DVDs of Pixel Core training and send them to you.
Right.
That's something you should do personally. But
I know. When you said that, I was like, "Wow, they're doing that! I better get back down there and figure out a way to make that easier." So, the hard part, of course, is trying to scale. One of the reasons we've been looking at mostly countries with a much smaller population is that you look at a country like India, and you have people that are taking, you know, getting huge opportunities that they never had before working in the information field, but you still have 99% of the population, you know, in just intense poverty, you know, and that's the thing, that it's going to be hard to scale fast enough to take care of that population, and they need to, You know, and India needs to, and I think that we really need to start rethinking, you know, how do people get into this whole thing about outsourcing and everything else. But, you know, we have a lot of advantages in the West, you know, and there's a lot of disadvantages in the you know, all around the world. And the least they could do is be able to, you know, compete on wages to get an opportunity.
But those disadvantages could be advantages. I mean, I have my family's from India, so I know a lot about the country. But what you know now is when we went back there this summer, every town, even the tiniest village, has a cable company. And the thing is, they're not run. Most of them aren't running on standard like copper cable. A lot of them are running on fiber-based cable system. So there's currently a move to link all of them together, and suddenly the whole country lights up.
Well, and you're seeing that. You're seeing that also in places like East Africa, where Kenya has already given up on landlines, and you know, they're running you know, faster connections, Wi-Fi,
landline,
IMAX,
DTM to Alex.
What?
Landlined DTM to Alex.
Yes, DTM. Yeah, dead to me. And all of this stuff is going away. And what's great about it is they didn't, you know, a lot of why we have DSL, for instance, is our TV networks are out there, our TV companies, you know, the suppliers, or telephone networks specifically. They spend a lot of money on those copper lines, and they want to make sure they get every penny out of them before they replace them with something faster. And so that's why we're stuck with DSL. What?
Ordered progression,
exactly.
Just
ordered
like
progression.
The camera industry.
Exactly. And so the issue is that they're trying to milk everything out of it, and it holds us back as a population. Whereas in the emerging world, they're getting super fast connections. You look at Korea, I mean, they're paying $40 a month for 100 megabits a second. You know what I mean? It's like, you know,
I mean, you could say Verizon is that crazy billionaire in the U.S. laying the fires everywhere, saying to the cable companies, yeah, we don't like ordered progression. We're going to offer you 2020 symmetric megabit connections.
They're talking about but they're going to figure out how they can milk
still
the
still not going fast enough, though.
Yeah. And so it's going to be, but as that picks up, once again, I think that we're going to be in a situation where there's going to be an intense demand for media production, and there just simply isn't going to be enough people to do it. And that's really what the Pixel Core is about, is let's get enough people ready to go so that they at least have that opportunity to jump in.
Okay, so the final topic today, which would be if you're interested in the Pixel Core, just before we cover everything else, can you explain your Macworld coverage? Because I've seen it here working for Twit, and it is something not to be missed.
Well, we're a couple things about what we're doing at Macworld. Number one is we're running the podcast studio, so there's going to be a ton of training. If you're actually at Macworld, there's going to be an incredible amount of training going on the floor for free, or for the cost of the Expo Pass. So it's well worth the $25 for the Expo Pass. We're going to be doing, you know, just it's really, you know, non-sales pitch, really, really heavy, nuts and bolts. This is how you get podcasting done. So we're going to be doing that from the floor at Macworld. On top of that, we're going to have some great folks covering the actual floor. So, of course, Leo and I will be out there talking about stuff, but we'll also have Justine, who's Justine Ezerick.
Justine covered it last year.
Yeah, so she's going to be there. Callie Lewis from Geek Brief.
So she's with you now.
Well, she's just guesting for the week, you know, to come cover a couple items for us. We're going to have Kirsten Sanford, who is the you know, from food science, this week in science, and so she's going to be covering pieces as well. And then we're going to have Kendra Aramoto, who was there last time as well. And so we've got these. Yeah. These girls are going to be going out and really checking out, you know, these, you know, our coverage, and they are super techie, you know, these are really some women with some big brains, and really are going to be helping out, getting all the stuff working out, and they're some of the best hosts out there, and so we're going to have a lot of fun at Macworld. We hope to do somewhere between 10 and 30 episodes that week, so it's going to be pretty heavy coverage. And it's usually the most exhaustive coverage of Macworld. So when it comes to videos, so it should be a lot of fun.
I mean, if I can just say here that you did a conference. Was it 2006 or was it earlier this year?
GMT.
Yeah, GMT, Game in Year Tech, and this was just $300, three days. You people learned everything. This is essentially what you're doing is moving geometry to the floor and then some.
Because
if you want to learn, like you made fun, you again jokingly made fun of yourself. If you need to learn about keynotes, speak to Craig Severson. I don't do keynotes. I just plug in my MacBook Pro onto the DVI port and go.
Right. Now I have to say we're going to be using a lot of keynote. I'm trying to actually be organized this time, and so I'm actually going to be structured. The first 15 or 20 minutes of every one will be a keynote to kind of make sure that I didn't miss anything, and then I'm going to open up. Then I'll just open up the gears and start showing people stuff, and so it'll be a mixture of the two. It should be. And Craig is doing his incredible presentations every day, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Leo Laporte once said, "Craig Severson, Steve Jobs' assistant, and the gods—the only people who can do those kind of presentations."
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree.
And I would, to a certain extent, I've seen some sample slides. I would think Steve Jobs' assistant can't do what.
You know, it's actually a company. There's a company called, I believe the name of the company is called Durant. And all they do is keynote presentations for Silicon Valley. And I had the opportunity to work with them in when I was speaking at the Worldwide Developers Conference for Apple. And anybody who's ever spoken at one of those, speaking at an Apple event is completely different than because like I say, I'll just show up and say whatever I'm going to say. You know, I show a bunch of stuff and then I go home. Well, you don't do that when you're at an Apple conference. You have calls, for
you
6 weeks. You have calls for 6 weeks, and then you prepare it, and then you bring your presentation in that's already been built to their template, and then they hand it to Durant and they make it look pretty. I mean, they just make it. They Apple-ize it, and they make everything look really cool, and everything's flying around, and everything's simplified and makes. And you're like, they're like, does this work for you? And I just kept on thinking, that's a lot better than what I was gonna do, And so, it really is an amazing. They're an amazing group, and but that's the secret behind a lot of those presentations.
Okay, so finally, just before we go here. If you're interested in the Pixel Core, you're really interested in the work you, Ben Durbin, and all of those people at the Pixel Core do, I'll just say, if you want to learn to their podcast, just head into iTunes, go to the podcast directory, type in Pixel Core or Twit. There's so much content, you practically don't need TV.
It's going to get a lot more intense this coming year, too, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
I mean, without being funny or anything, when I add in CNET plus the stuff you guys do has basically meant that all I watch on TV is sci-fi. That's it. That's all
Thank
I do.
You.
TV, dead to me. That's all the content you guys do there. There's a Macworld show floor, just to explain that to you. And remember, you're holding the Macworld sale at the Pixel Core for the Pixel Core membership. So if anyone wants to go through that, can you just explain that very lightly again?
Just go to the website after the first day of Macworld, and you'll see there'll be a link right there to go to the to find out more information about the Pixel Core sale.
Okay, so thanks for being here, Alex Lindsay. You've been a really great discussion.
Thanks.
And hopefully have you on another time.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You.
Thank you.